welcome inside Bank of America Stadium for another Panthers podcast. It's Thursday?
Yes, Bill.
Thursday, May 10th. This is Bill. You just heard Bill. And then you heard Brian, and Max is also here.
It's me.
And Brian fighting through today.
Yeah, I am a brave warrior today, Bill.
Brian dealing with the cold that he got on his, of course, cruise.
Yeah. You know what else I got on my cruise? Two trophies, my friend. I am still coming off the high of that from winning sports.
Didn't know where that was going to go, but he said no.
Just to be careful, Twitter user Jamie Clayton, we don't want to go too long on the non-football talk. He got really upset last week. He shot me and Max a tweet about how he was all the way almost home from his commute, and we hadn't talked football yet.
Yeah.
So,
Brian,
I'll tell you what, though, his commute sounds nice and short.
Yeah,
that'd be nice.
What, 6 minutes? You said
about five, 6 minutes.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I'd take that.
So sorry about that, Jamie. Sorry to inconvenience you like that. So let's talk football.
Let's get right into it, right?
See, it's not as exciting as Brian.
We want to talk more about
Brian. Get sick on a cruise,
right? Yeah. So yeah, me and Max. Max, you want to tell people about the interview we're bringing them today?
Yeah, we got a little special guest segment in this week's podcast. Brian, you did a phenomenal job as behind the wheels of steel, as we always call it in the radio studio, as Dane Brugler, senior NFL draft analyst for NFL Draft Scout, called in. And I just had a nice like 15-minute or so chat with him about the Panthers draft class. Dane is one of those guys who's just like, you know, borderline crazy when it comes to draft prospects and analyzing them. He does this insane draft guide each year that those in like scouting circles are, you know, very impressed with. So I thought he was a good guy to talk to, and he did a story about his favorite draft classes coming out of the 2018 draft and had the Panthers at number 3. So he's particularly high in that group, and he shares his opinions in a pretty good conversation.
Yeah, it was good. Did you do you know who was 1 and 2 were? I don't think that was mentioned on the interview.
The Bears, I remember, were his number 1.
Okay.
He was very, very pleased with what the Bears were able to accomplish, but for the reasons he will explain, also very high in the Panthers. So how's that? Sound like somebody you want to listen to?
Do you remember?
I mean, I think James Daniels getting him in the second round was something he just thought was great value. And I think pretty much for him, it's just the teams that drafted his favorite players, just guys that
makes
he thought were among the best that he scouted. Value comes into it a lot, too. I mean, you'll hear him talk about for the Panthers just getting Ian Thomas in the 4th round. I mean, the guy he thought he could have gone high in the 3rd. Right. So some value things mixed in as well. But it was pretty much just guys that he liked.
We need to cue it up.
Yeah, let's do it.
I'm the guy on the wheels of steel, right? I'm getting ready to hit the button. You ready? Here we go.
Get us going.
3, 2, 1.
Thanks for taking the time to join me here. I really do appreciate it.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
So, I mean, let me ask you, somebody like you in this profession who goes through, you know, the months leading up to the draft and all that work that's involved, and I know the really intricate draft guide that you work on. I mean, what are these weeks like after the draft? I mean, is this just a nice stage of relaxation for you, like a bit of a relief? What is this like for somebody like you now that the draft has come and gone?
It's a weird feeling because you put in, 18-hour days for months, and then all of a sudden one day it's just gone. And so I told my wife it's kind of like a pregnancy. You know, you focus all this time and energy on one thing, and then one day it's over.
Right.
We have 2 kids, so she didn't really appreciate that comparison. But
I hear you.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. It's you find yourself preparing for next year already just to kind of, you know, feel the urge that you kind of still have, you're holding on to from last month.
Right. All right. Well, I'm not going to ask you who the Panthers are going to draft in the 2019 class just yet. I did want to talk to you about this 2018 class because I was reading your article you wrote kind of about your favorite classes, and you had the Panthers there among the top 5 favorites of yours. I want to get to Rashawn Golden a little bit later on because I know you're particularly high on him and had him in your top 50 prospects. But aside from him, the other guys in that class, I mean, what immediately sticks out to you about what the Panthers did in this past draft?
Well, they were my number 3 class. I don't really do grades, but what I do is I go through all 32 teams once the draft's over, and I pick out my 5 favorite draft classes, just in terms of the players they picked up, in terms of the value. And the Panthers came in at number 3. And a lot of it is because I'm looking at the names that they drafted, and it's a lot of my favorite players in this draft. Starting at the top with DJ Moore, getting him at the 24th pick. He was my number 14 overall player. You know, maybe Steve Smith said it best, how, you know, they really haven't, the Panthers haven't been able to replace Smith until now. DJ Moore gives them, you know, a different type of target, a guy that can get open before and after the catch. He's, you know, 6 foot, 210 pounds, not this huge imposing target, but his speed, his route running, his physicality, it all stands out. And what he did at Maryland, you know, catching passes from 8 different quarterbacks the last 3 years, you know, being able to just be productive in an offense that sputtered along the way, had a lot of turnover at the quarterback position, really speaks to his ability, what he can do. And I think he's going to get better. And so adding him to that offense with obviously Cam Newton at quarterback and the rest of the supporting cast, I think he's going to have a chance to make an immediate impact. And so to get the top receiver at the 24th pick, I thought that set the stage for a nice draft haul for the Panthers.
Yeah, and so in your mind, DJ was the top receiver too. And I know he and Calvin Ridley had kind of gone back and forth throughout the process, but you had him as the top guy?
I had Ridley as my top guy,
okay.
But they were close. On my overall board, I had Ridley 11 overall and Moore 14 overall. So I thought they were, you know, pretty close, but I thought they were also clearly 1 and 2,
yeah,
with you know, a little bit of a gap before we even talked about the third best receiver in the draft.
So was it a surprise to you that a receiver didn't go until 24? I mean, you know, typically you'll see them kind of come off, you know, relatively early. I know there really wasn't that Julio Jones, A.J. Green type in this year's class, but was it all surprising to you that it took until the 24th pick to see a receiver go?
You know, I think it was a little surprising, but not totally unexpected, because, you mentioned it. There wasn't a Julio Jones and A.J. Green. We don't have there wasn't a true number one receiver in this draft.
Yeah.
You know, D.J. Moore, as much as I like him, as much as I like Calvin Ridley, those guys don't jump out to you as true number one. Now, if DJ Moore is able to, you know, develop into a Steve Smith target, okay, well, that might be different. But when you just look at, you know, what he brings to the table, you don't expect him to step in and fill that type of role. And that's not necessarily a knock against these receivers, because in reality, there's only 10 to 12 true number one receivers in the NFL.
Right.
And so I think DJ Moore, Calvin Ridley, these guys have a chance to be high-end number twos, you know, the type of players that can still impact the offense in a big way. They just might not be, you know, in that same mold as a lot of the number one receivers in the NFL.
Sure, sure. All right, now I do want to move to talk about Golden, because I did find it interesting that I believe on draft night you had mentioned that it was Golden who was in your top 50 prospects, and he was a guy that I think Panther fans were a little kind of just unsure about when his name came across the bottom of the screen, just didn't know a whole lot about him, played in a bunch of different spots in the Tennessee secondary. But what is it about his game that you're particularly high on to the point where you did have him among those top 50 players?
Yeah, and I don't know if it was because, you know, Tennessee was such a train wreck last year. You look at their team and they had a lot of youth, a lot of players that didn't really stand out. But when I threw on Golden's tape, which was right around probably mid-January, it was one of those, like, whoa moments where you're watching Rashawn Golden and you kind of, like, look around, like, you know, why isn't anyone talking about this guy?
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm surprised that no one was really talking about him. And then so I started tweeting about him and saying, all right, guys, this guy is really good. You know, like, it's time people really turned on to Rashawn Golden and what he can do. When you look at the defensive back position, whether it's corner, safety, nickel, which is a lot of what Rashawn Golden played, he was at his best in that nickel role, where he could play close to the line of scrimmage, he could drop, he could cover, just do a little bit of everything. But if you have play speed and you have toughness, you can play on my team any day. And Rashawn Golden has both. I know he ran in the 4.6s at the combine. A little disappointing. He didn't have great athletic numbers, but he plays with such confidence that his play speed is so much better than what you would expect a 4.6 athlete to run. And so I'm not so much worried about the testing numbers, because on film he looks really fast. He moves really well. He moves confidently. You know, he doesn't hesitate. And then he's tough, as both as a tackler, taking on contact, working through blocks. He doesn't shy away from any type of challenge, any type of slot receiver. He'll try and cover him. I am eager to see. It sounds like the Panthers are going to use him as more of a true safety.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm eager to see how that works, because I thought his best role was as a nickel defender. It's what he did the most on tape, and that's what he seemed to be most comfortable. So I'm eager to see how the Panthers, how they use him once they get on the field, and how he kind of adapts to, you know, if he plays more single high, if he plays you know, farther away from the line of scrimmage, how that works out.
Yeah, but it sounds like to me. In your opinion, the closer to the line of scrimmage, the better for him, almost just because of his ability, you know, to use that physicality, you know, in the run game or jamming guys to the line. Is that kind of the right read I've got on your take?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's where he did his best work. But he was a Swiss Army knife, because he did everything.
Right.
And you could throw on tape where he was playing single high, or he was playing man-to-man in the slot, or, you know, he just did so many different things,
right,
that, you know, I don't think that even if the Panthers do plug him in at, you know, free safety, I still think that they'll use him in different ways where he's not going to be the last line of defense on every single play,
right,
every single snap. Using that versatility will be a big part of why Rashawn Golden was absolutely worth where the Panthers took him.
Yeah, got him in that third round. I'm curious to see as well how they use that versatility. Another guy I wanted to ask you about that I think is maybe a lot of people's favorite pick the Panthers had in this draft was Ian Thomas, right at the beginning of day three, that first pick in the fourth round. Kind of a raw prospect out of Indiana, but everybody seems to think that if he puts it all together, he can be really special. What's your kind of just opinion on Ian Thomas and kind of where the Panthers were able to get him right in there at that beginning of the fourth round?
Yeah, and Ian Thomas, that might have been, you know, kind of the breaking point that made me put the Panthers in my top five favorite draft classes this year, because Ian Thomas is one of my favorite players. He was my number 67 overall player, so I had a high third-round grade on him.
Okay.
I thought if he went in the second round, I would have been totally fine with that. I understand that. And, you know, it was about this time last year where I was preparing for the 2018 draft, and I'm looking at just I'm a sick man, so I was watching Indiana spring game.
Oh my goodness!
And I like Sidney Cobb, I like some of the Indiana prospects, and it was this Ian Thomas who kind of was really flashing, really impressing, and I was like, who is this guy? And I look up, and he's a JUCO transfer, and he had three catches as a junior, and
right.
So I was like, okay, maybe there's something here. So I just, you know, make sure I put his name down. And then once the season got going and a chance to really watch more Ian Thomas, that's when I started to really, okay, yeah, this guy's got NFL traits. This guy is going to get better and better and better. And so, I think when we look back at this draft class in 3-4 years, we're going to look back at Ian Thomas as being an absolute steal. Even if he was drafted in a third round, I think we'd be looking at him as a steal. So for the Panthers to get him outside the top 100 picks, I thought that was excellent value. He moves really well. He's a big guy, you know, 6'4", 260 pounds. He's comfortable blocking in line. He's not just a receiver. You can line him up, and he'll try to match defensive ends, you know, pound for pound. And he does a nice job in that respect. So I think once he becomes more comfortable, catching the ball downfield, running seam routes, once he becomes more comfortable dealing with what NFL defenders are going to throw at him as a blocker, I think he's going to get just improved more and more. And so he might require a little bit of a redshirt season where he's going to be kind of brought along at his own pace.
Right.
But again, when we look back at this draft class in a couple of years, that's where I think the value is really going to prove that it was worth it. Not necessarily as a rookie, but down the line, that's where Ian Thomas is really going to shine.
Yeah, I love the selection, and I think it just makes so much sense with Greg Olsen here, you know, just signing another 2-year extension. Seems like a really good situation for a kid like this who does have a lot to learn, but has all those tools to really kind of learn and grow behind an all-pro like Olsen. So we'll see. The other guys I wanted to ask you about, Dante Jackson, the corner in the second round from LSU, and Marquise Haynes, defensive end, a lot of people thought might be an outside linebacker in a 3-4 scheme that they took in the fourth round, traded up to get in there and get him. the strengths for those two guys are obvious, right? I mean, Dante Jackson, one of the fastest players in the draft, but the size is a big concern for people. Is he big enough to really hold his own at this level? And the same could be said for Marquise Haynes. I mean, such great get-off, explosive off the line, but very much undersized for a prototypical 4-3 defensive end. Do you think those guys, with their strengths, can overcome those weaknesses?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, with Jackson, if you have that speed, you know, you're doing okay. And that's what you saw on film. Is even when there was a false step or he found himself out of position for a second, he's able to recover so quickly because he's twitched up. The instant acceleration, the speed is outstanding. I don't know what LSU was doing with him last year because they played him at free safety. They played him at nickel.
He was all over.
Yeah, put him at corner. Let him play. Let him press. Let him play man-to-man. Let him use that athleticism and let it shine. He reminded me a lot of Ronald Darby when he was coming out of Florida State, who has been a solid starting cornerback in this league the last few years. So I think Dante Jackson is going to be just fine. I do think the size is something you do worry about, 180 pounds. And he doesn't have the frame to get much bigger. So it's not like, you know, he's going to bulk up once he gets to the NFL. He's probably always going to be around 180. Maybe you can get him to 185. So you do worry about that as a tackler. And then, you know, going up against the Mike Evans, the Julio Jones right. of the world, you know, the bigger receivers, especially in that division. So you do worry about that at times. But when you have that speed, that makes up for a lot. You can really do a lot of things. And so I think that's why we're talking about Jackson being, you know, drafted where he was. You know, not being a first-round pick because of the size, but getting him outside the top 50 picks, that's not bad value for an athlete like that. And then with Marquise Haynes, yeah, I think the first thing that pops out with him, obviously, is the production. What he did in the SEC the last 4 years, getting after the passer, I think he's probably best as that nickel defender where he's just – you use him almost as a wide nine guy. You know, plug him in in some packages and just pin his ears back, let him go. I mean, the guy had 47.5 tackles for loss over his career. And he's at his best when he's moving downhill. He's trying to bend the corner, win with speed. And maybe you let him, you know, see how it goes. You know, give him more action as the season develops, his rookie season. See how he can do against the run. How he can do holding the point of attack. But there's no question. Yeah, what he does best is getting to the quarterback. And so I think that's why we're going to see Haynes as more of a sub package guy, that nickel rusher. And then if he proves that he can, you know, handle more responsibilities, notably against the run, then, you know, we'll see more action. His snaps will start to go up. But yeah, first and foremost, it's all about getting to the quarterback. And I think that's why the Panthers went and got him, so they can put him in sub-package positions to try and make the quarterback move his feet.
Absolutely. Yeah, Dane, great stuff, man. Thank you so much for taking the time to join me. Really do appreciate it. You do great work all throughout the draft process, so enjoy the time of year you've got right now.
Well, I appreciate it. Anytime. Thanks.
All right, there you go. Dane Brugler, formerly of CBSSports.com, now with NFL Draft Scout. Max, your biggest takeaway from that was...
I think the most interesting thing is his take on Rashawn Golden. He talked about it a little bit. He tweeted, you know, right after that pick that he was, you know, Golden's in my top 50. I think this is a slam dunk. You know, Panthers, great selection here. And that was, I think, unique from the reaction I saw after the Golden pick. You know, after the Golden pick, I think a lot of Panther fans were kind of scratching their heads. First of all, trying to figure out who this guy was. You didn't really hear about him at all connected to the Panthers during the pre-draft process. And then, obviously, Tennessee wasn't very good, so you didn't really see him that often or know much about him. So, obviously, as Dane explained, he thinks he's got a lot of tools to work with. He thinks he's going to be a really productive player. And I just, you know, curious to see if he's right, because obviously the Panthers hope so.
Can I just highlight something about what you just said, and then we can get back to actually talking about the actual topic that you were talking about? You said he wasn't connected to the Panthers in the pre-draft process, and isn't that the problem with so much fan reaction when these things happen, no matter what team it is? Because you haven't seen this guy connected to you. Well, how can this make sense? Yep. Because blah, blah, blah said, right? It was like it was a Morgan Moses a few years ago.
For sure.
He was in all those mock drafts, and the Panthers in the tank. Panthers didn't like him.
Yeah.
They didn't want it, it had nothing to do with them.
But you're led to believe.
Because he was connected in the pre-draft process by these mock drafts.
Right. You're led to believe they liked him because of all that. Or you're led to believe that this would make sense for that. Like, in this year's draft for safety, for instance, like, how much do we hear about Justin Reed and Jesse Bates?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
In reality, the Panthers were not nearly as high on those two guys as it was made out to be. And so when those names are on the board and the Panthers are up on the clock and they don't take them, a lot, to your point, I think a lot of fans are like, well, wait a minute, what are they doing?
Jesse
this
Bates,
is the,
Jesse
the guy
Bates
right
wasn't
here.
Even close to what some people were saying.
No, the grade they had for him, he was not going to get taken by this team early in the draft. That just
and then
wasn't
Ronnie Harrison, I think you mentioned that in Grill Bill this week, that he was, wasn't he a top number first round draft pick in some of the mocks?
We saw him in some, I
and
think, so one or two.
To the Morgan Moses thing. He's still there in the third, and the Panthers pick this guy that's listed as a DB by Tennessee and as a cornerback on the draft broadcast in Rashawn Golden that people haven't really heard a lot about.
Mm-hmm.
And Ronnie Harrison is still on the board. How can that be?
Right. So the guy doesn't have safety listed next to his name, and then Ronnie Harrison was there, but we've seen him connected with Ronnie Harrison, so that must have been a bad pick, and we don't get it.
Yeah.
So that's why I get so upset with this pre-draft.
Yeah, there's a lot of,
because it makes people then upset when things happen and they think that their team's doing stupid things. And maybe they are doing stupid things. Maybe Golden won't work out. Maybe Ronnie Harrison will be an all-pro safety.
That's the
but
other side. Yeah.
These guys, I can't pretend to know more football than the people in these front offices that are actually making this decision. So, c'est la vie. Anyway, back to your point.
Agreed on all counts. The final thing on Golden, I think this is something I know you touched on in your Grill Bill. It's still figuring out kind of where he's going to play and how that's going to play out. Because he's a safety for this team. But as Dane explains, he thought his best work was at nickel. So
Mayock said the same thing.
And he could see, now Dane mentioned that, he could see why the Panthers want to put him at safety. He has the traits to succeed there. But from what they've seen from him so far, this guy operates out of the nickel at a high level. That's where they think he thrives at least right now. So that'll be, I'm still very curious to see how that plays out and if we do get to see Golden at nickel at all throughout his time with the Panthers.
It certainly doesn't sound like at first.
Yeah,
so
they want him to be a safety.
All that, what you just said, right, I can then understand fan frustration.
Mm-hmm.
Because why are you kind of trying to fit this guy into a safety and what?
This is
but
a bit
again,
of a projection.
They
it
see
is.
Him as a safety.
That he does have experience there, too, though.
Correct.
It's, best work, and again, it's beauty in the eye of the beholder. What do we think about what the Panthers brass thinks about what they saw him as safety? I don't think they would have reached there for a guy that they didn't feel like was ready for that position, especially given all the options they do have at nickel already.
And if Ronnie Harrison was that clear of a choice, there's a reason they didn't like him. There's a reason why other teams didn't like him, where he lasted, like 8 or 10 picks after Golden went in the third round.
That's the other thing about all this, too, is, Panther fans are focused on what the Panthers did or didn't do. Well, look at all these other teams that decided not to take a guy like Ronnie Harrison when everybody's saying, look at the value here. He was a first-round guy in some of the mock drafts I saw. There is a reason or reasons why that does not happen.
Yeah. What else did you take away from that chat?
I mean, I think he likes the value that Carolina got, and I agree with him. We've talked about Dante Jackson and his size, and if he was an inch or two taller, he's maybe an end of the first round type pick. I mean, he thinks the speed makes up for his deficiencies, and that was a really good get where they got him. He thinks he could have been taken in the top 50. And then Ian Thomas, was the first pick in the fourth round, was a guy that Dane was really high on. And I, that's the one pick that I think, whether it's Dane or Josh Norris or Mike Mayock, whoever else, everybody seems to agree that the Ian Thomas pick was a great pick. And who knows if everybody's going to be right or wrong, but everybody seems to be in agreement that this guy has everything you look for at a developmental tight end. And as we've said, if things click, look out. I mean, he could have what it takes to be special.
Yeah, with the Jackson thing, I mean, both Jackson and Golden, he was talking about their toughness, their, how good a tacklers they are. I don't know if he specifically said that with Jackson.
Yeah.
But certainly these guys, Jackson plays bigger than his size. His speed makes up for it. The thing about he'll have a misstep here and there, but speed rules. You can't teach that.
Right.
He clearly really liked the guy and wasn't as worried about his size as some are. And then, again, with the Thomas thing, I think we were all excited about that pick and that possibility. You just don't know. That is a little bit of a based on potential.
Yeah. And the one guy we even haven't even talked about at all is DJ Moore, the guy they took with their first round pick. And obviously, you know, Dane, a big fan of him. He had DJ as his 14th best player in the draft.
Yeah.
So that tells you a little bit about the value there. I did ask him, and I thought it was interesting, you know, were you surprised that a receiver didn't go until 24? You know, and as you know, you hear in the interview we talked about, there was no Julio Jones type or A.J. Green type, right. The 6'5", 220-pound receiver who looks the part of a number one stud. But he seemed to think he wasn't all that surprised by it. He thought Moore and Ridley were by far the best two receivers, and there was that drop-off after them. For what it's worth, he had Calvin Ridley as his 11th best player in the class. So he did have Ridley just a notch above, and as we have discussed before, too, that's going to be fascinating to see the career paths of Moore and Ridley and which one ends up having the better career.
Yeah, especially given where Ridley ended up. Of course, we'll see plenty of him in Atlanta.
Yep.
Hey, we actually get to see some of these guys, or all these guys, on the field.
Some actual football to watch.
Kind of.
Yeah.
So I guess that's a good point.
I mean, kind of. I mean, it's better than what we've had.
Yeah.
But it's, I mean, is it
football? I guess a football will be thrown around and caught. Yeah. So that there's that.
Yeah. You guys remember last year. Wait a second. Am I going to get this wrong? Christian was a part of the.
He was.
He was a part of it. Then he disappeared for a while.
Bill's the expert on all of this kind
of stuff. Right. Because you go back a few years ago, and I remember seeing Kelvin out there, and it was like, what? Are you kidding? Are you kidding me? This guy is a man amongst boys.
Right. And that was literally true in a lot of ways.
Then and then I remember a few years ago looking at Zach Sanchez with all the other like rookies around him and thinking, this guy's small.
Yeah,
for around this group, what's it going to look like with the other group? And right, that was kind of alarm bells for me. So I do think you can see some things. Like Christian was by far and away just the fastest, quickest guy out there last week. So I'm curious what we'll see this week. What'll stand out? Well, obviously DJ won't be showing his yak ability against air or you know, very light coverage.
Right.
But I wonder what will stick out. Will we see Dante Jackson's speed? Will we look at Ian Thomas and be like, yeah, he really does just look the part?
Yes. All true, Bill.
Yeah, I mean, I'm fast. I want to see how fast Dante Jackson looks. I mean, that's the first thing. I mean, this guy has talked very confidently about his speed, and I'm curious to see it in action. Who knows if we'll really get to see him open it up. And just kind of how he interacts with everybody, too, right? I mean, I think we're all a little fascinated by somebody who's got this kind of personality to him. So I'm curious to kind of see if we see him yapping a little bit with some of the wide receivers he's lined up across from, or if how he just engages with the fellow DBs. I think you're always looking for those kind of intangible things as well when they first get out on the field. You kind of want to see what kind of confidence these guys have.
Yeah, I think people know this, but to specify, like, it's a pretty big group that'll be out there, but upwards of 30 of them will be, you know, invited tryouts. So you'll have the drafted rookies, the undrafted rookies, which I think we're all saying we'll be looking at the guards there. There's a trio of guards the Panthers brought in there.
And I know you can evaluate guard play really
well. Oh, I mean, especially in this without practice pads setting. On, right? I think we'll come away with an obvious pecking order about which guy's the next Andrew Norwell, right? You can go ahead and pencil him in.
Exactly.
And then you'll have a few guys that qualify for this because of their status that were already on the roster, you know, they get to work.
Yeah, like Elijah Hood will be here.
Yeah, for example. Yeah.
And I think, like, in the past, didn't Damier Bird show up to a rookie minicamp before? And so you get, like, a veteran or two to kind of lead the way.
Right.
And I remember Damier stood out big time.
I remember Kyaris Garrett last year, and it was like, okay, he's the veteran amongst these guys, and he wasn't standing out. It was like,
you can learn some things about that. Yeah.
So, yeah, that'll be the basic setup, and I don't know what I was going to say. I'm under the weather. Remember, guys? Somebody save me.
You're doing a great job fighting through, though.
All right, thank you.
Persevering, fighting through the adversity.
You do it for the kids and the fans. You do it for the kids and the fans.
I do. All right.
Well, hopefully next time we talk to you guys, Brian will be feeling better or maybe on another vacation.
Who knows? We'll see. I don't have my calendar in front of me.
All right, all. That'll do it for another Panthers podcast. Talk to you next time.